And here we go. Welcome back to Snakes, Rats, and Goats, talking about Survivor Season 40, Winners at War. I'm your co-host, Ryan Elder, and with me, as always, is...
your co-host, Scott Chernoff.
Oh, mixing it up this time, huh, Scott?
Always.
Getting bored with the dry response?
Always.
All right.
We're, what, 3 weeks in?
Yeah. Three weeks in, yeah. You got to mix it
bored.
Up. All right. Well, I wasn't bored during this episode, and before we get into it, I want to bring our guest on board.
Please do.
Scott.
Yes.
He's your partner in crime. He's your Cops R Us, if you will.
He really is. Yes. The Cops R Us Alliance is back.
You guys know him. You love him. He's been on our podcast before. We got JD Riznar here today. JD, welcome.
Hello. This is going to be like a lost episode of Hot Streets.
I think it is.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know what Ryan was talking about, first of all, shame on you.
Yes.
Secondly, our brilliant guest, JD Riznar, and I, in the interim between, in the years that we weren't doing this podcast, quite recently, JD and I played partners on a show called Hot Streets, an animated show for Adult Swim.
Yeah, you guys were both policemen.
Kind of.
Detectives, right?
More or less, yeah. Sure. It worked for the Cops R Us analogy. Yeah. It was a great show. Of course, you know JD from many other things.
Yes.
None of which come to mind.
It's okay.
Drunk history.
Drunk historian. Creator of Yacht Rock. He's done it all. And he's appeared on our podcast enough times for us to demand he come back.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can now also add the mantle of 3-episode Survivor Watcher.
Yeah, when we first met JD on this podcast, he had never seen Survivor before.
And now he's seen at least 3 episodes.
I have a little more experience, too, because I was watching old Amazing Races with my son, right?
Oh.
Season, like, 4, 5, or 6 of Amazing Race, who shows up as a team but Rob and Amber?
Aha.
Yeah, so you're familiar with those two. That's great.
Their fame. And, man, he was an interesting player on that show because nobody plays the Amazing Race like Survivor, but he did. And they kicked butt.
Yeah, it was kind of amazing that he brought strategy into that game in a way that it had never been used before.
Yeah, and you know, we're getting to see him really put on a clinic this season in Winners at War. And
it's amazing because, you know, Adam said, well, this isn't Survivor Redemption Island. And everybody has said, oh, Rob won Survivor Redemption Island because it was his 4th time playing. And he was with a bunch of new people who didn't know what they were doing. And he was easily able to intimidate and lead them. Maybe we're reassessing that now. Maybe he can also intimidate and lead some of the best players and most experienced players on Survivor.
So far.
How the hell is he still there?
The guy's instincts are so good. It's almost like there's no way like the producers don't just love him because he's so likable and just tell him how to play. There's no way.
You think he's being told how to play?
That he translates it to Amazing Race, and that's insane. It's insane how good he is at this game. That was It was probably the game was probably like 4 or 5 years old when he won for the first time.
Well, he played for the first time in season 4. It was like 2 years old. He won his 4th time playing in season 22.
Oh, okay.
So that was about, what, 9 years
ago? It took him a while. It took him a while to hone these skills. Let's be honest. Okay. You know, his first time out, he wasn't great. His second time, he was pretty great. His 3rd time out, not so great.
His second time, the thing is, his style of play is always the same, so it's kind of a... he plays big, so he either gets eliminated early or he goes all the way to the end. His second time playing was when Amber won, and he came in 2nd place to her. He lost by 1 vote. he played a pretty masterful game back then. He just hadn't mastered the art of the social game, where he had alienated too many people who were just, even though he played a stronger game than Amber, they just did not want to reward him because they felt personally betrayed and hurt by him.
Yeah. So let's just start at the beginning of this episode.
You know, I rewatched the beginning. I only rewatched about the first 10, 15 minutes this morning. And it struck me on the rewatch that the very opening where Rob was kind of toying with Adam with like a twig became a foreshadowing metaphor for the whole episode.
Yeah. That was such a great scene. Super funny and like almost cute, right? He wakes him up. It's like, good morning.
Yeah.
It really made me laugh. And then, yeah, like you said, like it was just Rob just taunting Adam. Like Adam's confidence for this episode was just classic overconfidence for Survivor. There's one thing that the editors love to do. It's they like to set up someone who's really full of themselves and thinks they're great and then knock them down a peg, right?
Well, for a few minutes there, I thought, well, maybe, is he going to pull this off? This is fascinating. And I was watching with my wife, who is way more of a casual fan, and I was kind of like, ooh, this is interesting. I can't believe he's telling Rob this, but maybe he's right. Maybe he's got Rob right where he wants him. My wife was like, are you nuts? Is he crazy? Does he remember who he's talking to?
Yeah, totally. Totally.
JD, was there anyone else that you recognized from the other times you've watched Survivor? Or the Amazing Race?
No, I saw Amber.
Right.
So they're on some Netherworld, right?
Yep. I guess we better explain
the
Netherworld.
They're in the Netherworld. There's an alternate dimension. Go ahead, Brian.
So it's called Edge of Extinction.
You're a big fan of that.
I'm such a big fan of Edge of Extinction, so I should be the one to explain it. It's called Edge of Extinction. When you get voted out, you go to the Edge of Extinction, and you remain there participating in whatever sort of weird parlor games they send your way while you're there, but ostensibly to win your way back into the game at some point. They've done this once before. They had a challenge at the Merge episode, which is midway through the season, for someone to get back in the game. And then they had another challenge at, what was it, Final Six for someone to get back in the game?
Yeah.
Scott? Yeah. So if they do it like they did last time, two people will get back into the game at some point this season from that. And one of the things that's going on this time is we've got these fire tokens. We might as well transition into Edge because it did have a big chunk of this episode.
Yeah, well, I was curious to hear JD coming in this episode, what, you know, you've seen a couple episodes before, but now there's not only the Netherworld, but the fire tokens.
Right. Yeah, that just went over my head, and I figured maybe I'd figure that out by the end. I also thought that Amber and the two other people were just part of a third tribe.
Right.
It kind of seems like it, right? Yeah. Mm,
becoming that way.
Yeah, eventually that tribe will be bigger than the others. But
so I was actually super confused until the end, when the guy who got voted out showed up and said hi to those guys. I was like, oh.
Yeah, that makes sense. Just in time, you figured it out.
Now I see.
Yeah. Yeah. So when he got voted out, he had to give his fire token. Everybody got one fire token at the beginning of the game.
Ryan, it's not give. We don't say give.
Oh, you're right. We have to use bequeath. That's right.
We say bequeath.
Yeah.
That's the parlance.
I think the real triumph of Survivor is them getting these douchebags to use terms like bequeath.
It's pretty amazing when you think about it.
Like they're playing D&D.
I wonder how many times the producers have had to correct them. You know, because they very clearly are specifically only using that word.
Say it again as a complete sentence and make sure to use the word bequeath.
Yes. And maybe if you want to start it with as a police officer.
a winner.
So let's talk about the little box on the Edge of Extinction where Natalie and Amber and I've already forgotten her name. She's just like so important to the season.
Danny.
Danny. They find this box by the tree. It's pretty obvious from the little piece of paper that they got where to find it. But what were you guys thinking? Like when Amber went down and found those numbers, were you guys?
I thought, oh wow, Amber has figured it out. Maybe her Amazing Race experience is helping, because that really reminded me of an Amazing Race challenge.
Hmm.
Where really? you have to I've seen Amazing Race, what do they call them, tasks or whatever, mm-hmm. where they have to figure something out or count a number of steps or whatever,
yeah.
climb up to a tall thing and then make a, you know, give their answer and hopefully they're right. And then they have to go, if they're not, they go back down and start over again.
Yeah, it kind of felt like that. It wasn't very survivory because they didn't have a green obstacle course they had to run through.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I also was like, oh, you go, Amber. Nice, right? And I thought it was funny when Natalie was like, where are you going, Amber, 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 Amber? You know, and they like echo it out like Amber's already all the way down the hill by then.
Well, I mean, I just thought Natalie, I don't have much to say about Amber. I just thought Natalie was amazing.
Amazing. Scott, she's living up to your expectations
this
for
is
her.
The except for getting voted out first.
Yeah.
This is the Natalie that I know and love. The sneaky, brilliant, you know, deceiver who, like, in her original season, when she, you know, she really pulled a long con and drew people in and then cut them off. And when she cast that vote against what was it, Drew or Alec, and was like, oh, I thought I was supposed to vote for him. Yeah. No, I wasn't. That wasn't the plan. And they right. believed her. This was so great. Not only when she figured it out, but the fact that she threw the other necklace into the bushes and destroyed the third one was amazing. And then didn't tell them that she found it.
Yeah, I knew that was incredible and brilliant. I was very impressed by that.
Yeah, the destroying of the necklace. Do you think she threw the one in the bushes and then she's like, actually, I should destroy it, but I'm not going to bother to go find the other one. I'm in a hurry.
She just kind of had to blur it up a little bit, you know? She just had to make it not so easy to think about that's where the solution was, so.
Yeah, cool. I wonder, at what point do Danny and Amber figure out that puzzle's been solved and they can no longer get it.
I don't know. I think that they cut that storyline off when they were like, I'm not going back up there ever.
Yeah. That was it. That, as far as we're concerned, that was the end of the story, right?
That was very convenient for the editors. They were like, oh, thank goodness she said that. We can end this. Yeah.
We don't really want to include all this footage of them going up there again 10 minutes later and still trying to, and still finding out that it was broken into, you know, all that stuff.
I mean, they might have been up and down 10 times when she said that.
Absolutely. And it didn't look like it was an easy climb, per se.
At what point do Danny and Amber realize that their necklaces are missing?
It's a good question. We'll never know. I guarantee it. Well, I don't guarantee it. It's possibly we might find out next episode.
We'll find out when some nerd like us asks them after the season is done.
Fair enough. Yeah. Good call. Yep. It'll be exposed eventually, but I loved that. I loved that whole scene. Natalie is such a badass. It's great to, you know what? In that moment, I was kind of like, okay, Edge of Extinction. What? You get 1 point in your pro column. You still have 500 in the con column, but for now,
I'm glad that at least it's giving Natalie a chance to shine. Totally. And she's going to get so many fire tokens, she'll be able to get an advantage. And I think she's got a strong chance to get back in that game, even though I hate people coming back into the game.
Yeah, and I think she might be, I mean, she's not going to be a dead man walking coming back in either, you know? Like, I doubt that they're going to be like, we have to get rid of Natalie immediately. But maybe.
I don't know. JD, I mean, you have never seen a Survivor episode where people can get back on. What do you think of this?
I think it's good. I think a lot of times people that the audience really love, say like you and Natalie Choff.
Yes, I do love
her. They get kicked off too early. And then you get to see him scheming again some more and come back in the game. And I think it's unless, like, every time, like you guys say, they're dead men walking and they get voted off right away. I think it's an interesting twist.
How would you feel? Happened the last time? Yeah.
Go ahead.
What happened the last time is the person who came back at the merge in the middle of the game was kind of a fan favorite. And then he came back, played a very entertaining game for the rest of the season and almost won. But then the second person came back with just a few days left in the game, had been on the edge of extinction since episode 3, I believe, was the third person voted out, won his way back into the game, played a very impressive game for the last few days, and won the entire season. Mm. And it's very controversial because a lot of people hate that he didn't actually have to play Survivor for most of the season, but he still won.
Well, he did play Survivor, though, because them folks could have been like, we're not going to give this guy a free pass, let's vote him out. But they didn't do that, because he played Survivor, albeit for like 2 episodes.
it was actually 1 episode, yeah. Like, didn't he come back for the finale?
It was the finale, but there were like 6 people left besides him. He played masterfully in the finale, but you gave the pro argument, which is he played the game and he played it according to the rules. You can't blame him that they decided to do Edge of Extinction and, you know, he was able to win his way back in. But the con argument is he spent all this time bonding with the jury in a way that nobody else could.
That's a key element, is that the jury was made up of everyone who had ever been voted out that season. So everybody he hung out with on Edge of Extinction the whole time.
I see.
And they basically all strategized before the competition to get back in to say, whoever goes back in, these are the things you'd need to do to win.
Oh, okay.
He did them very well, but the kind of Jeff Probst even has often said in Survivor, it's tricky because you have to vote people out and then get them to vote you $1 million, and this guy didn't have to do that. So
I see the con. Yeah, yeah.
There are pros and con arguments. And I think it also might come down to how much you love the person who's coming back. If it's Natalie, I might be very excited.
Yeah, you know, this season, it's probably going to be someone we like, right? Because we like almost the entire cast. Actually, we like the whole cast, except for I don't like Ben. But, you know.
And even you don't like Ben for reasons that are this game mechanics, not...
Right. Yeah. It's not related to this season either. Actually, this season, Ben is really entertaining.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with Ben this season yet. I think he's like a great character, and it's fun to see him like that. He's like the chaotic opposition to Boston Rob that's like trying to figure out how to get him but can't really get there.
But can we talk about that? Why? And JD, maybe you have some thoughts about this. Why is it all about let's try to weaken Rob? What about vote Rob out?
Yeah, that's the best way to weaken him,
right?
I don't
understand. Can somebody explain this to me? JD, what happened?
I don't know. I feel like everybody wants Rob around for some reason. Everybody wants Rob to somehow get on his side because they think he can get them to the end. I don't know. I can't think of that. I was just shocked. Like, if I showed up on a Survivor season and Boston Rob was there, I'd be like, dudes, let's vote him out right away.
Yeah, right. I thought for sure he was going to be an early boot. I mean, they voted out Amber. Literally, both tribes have tried to weaken Boston Rob three out of the 4 votes. Like, the Danny boot was sort of to weaken Boston Rob as well.
Yeah.
And then the Amber vote, obviously, was to weaken Boston Rob. So, but why not just vote him out? And then, like, it's not that big of a deal. But I think there's, you know, part of it could be a fear of hidden immunity idols. You know, y'all, like, I believe it was Dave Ball who said to us, like, maybe we should have taken out the lieutenant instead of the general when it came to Russell Hance. And I think there is a tendency now in modern Survivor to focus on taking out the lieutenants instead of the general first. Because often that's the safer route when the general is someone who finds a lot of idols, for example.
The general was terrible at the game, by the way. He made it past the merge. Don't you remember?
I vaguely remember.
Robert Decanio in season four. Boston Rob's first season was known as the general.
Okay, good callback. I wasn't talking. I was speaking metaphorically.
I know.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah. So, I mean, I'm just trying to make a case for why they might do it. But also, I think, like JD said, I think they probably do think they want to work with him, right?
But why would you want to work with him? I mean, if you make it to the end with Boston Rob, who's going to win?
You know, I think I'm just realizing how flawed that strategy is, because they are just picking off his lieutenants. So if somebody got in his alliance, they would just get picked off right away as well.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I want to vote off his alliance members so I can be in his alliance.
Yeah.
Then I'll get voted off.
I want to get a promotion to the job title that gets killed the soonest. Yeah, it's mind-boggling. I really don't get it. I mean, I think we got Adam's explanation, right? Like, Adam wants to work with Boston Rob. He thought him and Rob were really close. And I think it's the same. A lot of people feel the same way about Parvati, or should I say poverty. You know, I think it's really obvious that a bunch of people think Parvati is like a big asset to them, right? Because so many people were like, ugh, we can't do that. You know what I mean?
I mean, there must be a lot we're not seeing. I get that there's fear of voting off Rob, or fear of angering Rob. Like, you know, if you're going to take a shot at the king, you can't miss whatever that thing is. But like, I mean, Adam said this episode, I know he doesn't have an idol.
Yeah.
This point, they were down to three: Boston Rob and two allies. It doesn't make sense to me.
Is he just that valuable to the tribe, maybe?
Did he build them a shelter? Because when Sarah went and infiltrated, which we'll talk about later.
Yes, I can't wait.
We know this. Caden, my wife was like, well, don't they have doesn't Boston Rob build these amazing shelters? Why are they all sleeping out on the ground?
Yeah.
I would imagine Boston Rob is tired of playing the game.
You think so?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He does kind of seem low energy this season, right? I mean, maybe that's on purpose.
Low energy.
Yeah, I know. There's baggage with that phrase, but
maybe he was excited to have his lover on the show with him. That maybe they could get off for dalliances for a little more energy.
One fire token, you get a conjugal visit. Wouldn't that be amazing if Amber bought herself a conjugal visit? Rob will come to your prison island, make sweet love to you.
Oh, I love this idea. I mean, honestly, that is extremely valuable, right? Like,
the conjugal visit?
Well, it should go the other way, right? Well, okay, conjugal aside. Like, if you could spend a fire token to go chat with the jury, that would be, like, so valuable late in the game.
That would be huge. That would be. You're right. I don't know. It's all... I know he was deaf. I think, JD, you're onto something, that when he discovered she was voted out, it really did seem to deflate him and spook him.
Mm-hmm. They might have had a whole plan together, like, all kidding about making sweet love aside. Like, I'm sure they strategized. All right, here's what we're going to do.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they did. And that's why people broke them up immediately.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no guarantee that there are pregame alliances for anyone, right? Unless you know for a fact that you're in a pregame alliance, you can't really know for sure if there are pregame alliances, except for if two people are married.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's the only no-brainer. These two people will never vote each other out. So it made sense to get rid of one of them. I just don't know why they haven't gotten... Maybe they're afraid of having both Amber and Rob on Edge of Extinction together, like... That's too powerful or something. I don't know.
How is that powerful?
Well, we know it's not powerful. We know it's not powerful, but the people playing might not know that it's not powerful. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, it's highly unlikely they'll both make it back in if they're both out there.
Right, that's true.
So could it be they're waiting to see if Amber makes it back in so they can decide which one they want to get rid of?
Maybe.
I think they're just screwed up. I mean, they were going to vote out Parvati, it seemed.
You know, I suspect that, and it seemed like this, Jeremy and then by extension Michelle have a lot of power on this tribe as sort of like the deciders, the swing votes. Mm-hmm. And I think Jeremy is protecting Rob. Because they know each other from real life. Like, Jeremy wasn't in the poker alliance from that clip, but he and Rob have played poker together many times.
Right. Yeah. We see how being friends with Rob outside the game has helped people in the past. Oh, wait. Yeah. We saw quite the opposite.
Well, it's helping Rob. Yeah. It's helping Rob now.
It's helping Rob. Yeah. Just like being friends with Lex helped Rob.
Exactly.
Exactly. Talk to Lex today. He is not happy.
Still.
I just read a recent interview with Lex.
How many years has it been?
Since All-Stars. So it's like 16 years.
Jesus.
It sounds like he's over it, but he's certainly not friends with Rob anymore. And
yeah,
he certainly thinks about how if it weren't for his mistake in trusting Rob, Rob wouldn't even have this huge legacy. He probably wouldn't even be on this season.
Yeah, it would be Lex instead of Rob on this season.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Crazy. Anyways, let's talk about Cops R Us and the infiltration of the other camp.
Oh, my gosh.
Did JD you ever
had
think?
Never seen Tony before.
Oh, yes. That's amazing. First of all, JD, what's your take on Tony? We gotta hear this.
I wonder if I have seen him before. What season was he from?
Well, he was on he won season 28, but you might have depending he came back for season 34, but he was second voted out, which happened on the 2-hour premiere. So unless you did, which you might have.
You might have been our first guest that season.
You might have been our first guest that season. You might have seen.
I'll look it up.
And he ran out into the jungle like right away to look for hidden immunity idols and was just all over the place and crazy.
Was that blue collar? White collar?
No.
Yeah, JD didn't do anything on season 34 with us.
Okay, so Tony should be new to you.
Okay, okay. I didn't see there actually wasn't that much of him for me
got it.
He seemed like he had a funny East Coast blue collar accent. And that's all I
Yeah. Well, he had the shark. The shark scene was pretty funny.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
He's just running all directions with it.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll come back to the shark, but I want to talk about did you ever think, Scott, you'd see blackface on Survivor?
I was going to bring that up. I didn't, no. But if anybody was going to pull it off, it'd be Tony.
I like to think that Sarah was like, okay, this is going to be a big TV moment. I'm really boring. How am I going to make this more interesting? Let me get Tony involved and see what kind of crazy ideas he has about what I should do to get in here.
I mean, what? It's pitch black at night. Why did she need to be wearing blackface?
So the moon doesn't shine on her lily white face.
I guess.
I think it's a good strategy. Just as long as she wasn't doing a minstrel show character.
Yes, exactly. She wasn't carrying a cane
she just immediately became racist when putting it on. She said, well, I think I need backup. I was like, oh.
Yeah, that was so good.
Let's get Tony involved here.
I thought he was going to try to sneak in with her, which would have been
incredible. I was disappointed about that.
There's a question. Yeah. So it looks like she got a boat ride to that other island?
Yeah.
From a professional boat ride giver?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because she found that clue, she was entitled to a sneaky boat ride.
Sounds like, yep.
The only way to get to the other island.
Okay, interesting.
I mean, they want... Go ahead.
didn't the tribe that she was sneaking up on hear the boat motor approaching? Or maybe there's just enough boat motors, they don't think about it.
Maybe.
Production. She might have come with the nighttime production team, because I know they have a different team to do overnights.
So they did this type of infiltration thing once before. Last season, JD, I don't know if you heard about, heard mentioned during the episode about a statue of Boston Rob.
I heard a statue of Pavarti.
Oh, well.
That was the context that it was in, yeah, but he was actually talking about Rob.
Oh, okay.
I could see how that, I actually was like confused, like, wait, why is he talking about Parvati's statue?
Well, like, last season they had Boston Rob and Sandra, who's on the other tribe, on as sort of mentors on another. They were living on another island. They weren't playing the game, but mm-hmm. there were these giant tiki like totems of them on this island.
They were huge, like probably 30, 40 feet tall, right?
Yeah. And the players in the game didn't know they were there until they got one by one, you know, separate times taken to the island of the idols. And they would be given these like tasks or tests or challenges to try to earn an advantage. And ostensibly the conceit was Rob and Sandra are going to teach you their knowledge of how to play and win Survivor. But half of the challenges were just very random. And I remember they did this and they said, okay, Vince, you're going to have to go to the infiltrate the other camp while everybody's sleeping and find an immunity idol. And at the time I was like, what are they teaching here? Yeah. Nobody ever on Survivor has to go infiltrate the other camp. Well, now they do.
Mm-hmm. It was yeah, they were just looking
for the future.
Forward thinking. Yeah, I love it.
Vince, we're going to teach you how to do something that'll come into play next season when you're gone.
Unless you win. Yeah. So, yeah, I like that they did this. I think it's funny and it's always entertaining seeing someone fumble around in the dark. And it's kind of a foolproof way of giving someone an advantage because I don't think they can really screw it up that easily, you know. But I'm living for the day they do get caught. Like, that would be fantastic.
When are they going to get caught?
I don't know.
When
Can't
are
wait.
They going to get caught? Yeah, but I loved it too. I love that Tony was involved. Why do you think Natalie sent it to Sarah? Now, I know she said she wanted to get the token and she wanted to send it to somebody who she thought would, you know, have the kind of balls to actually do it and not turn it down. So was Sarah the right person for her to send it to then?
I mean, let's be completely results oriented. Yes, she got the token from her. But strategically game wise, I don't know that it matters. I mean, we're talking about a really small edge here to give it to someone else, right?
But why Sarah? I mean, they're not on the same tribe. It seemed like a very random choice.
Maybe because she was hoping Sarah would get caught. And then that would be good for Natalie. I don't know. She said on Twitter, the reason she did it is because Sarah seemed like someone who would take the deal to her.
Oh,
and that might be all there is to it. You know?
That?
Yeah. Sarah's sneaky, you know,
wouldn't have taken the deal.
No, everybody would have taken the deal because here's why. I was thinking about this last night. You don't, those fire tokens to you seem worthless when you're actually in the game, right?
Right.
There's nothing to spend them on. You only have one. There's been so far no way to get more than one. So like you're finally presented with a way to spend your fire token. You're going to do it no matter what. It's a no brainer. So I think Natalie might be overthinking it. She just needs to send it to someone who has a token. You know,
I love that she's now a billionaire.
That was funny. That was really funny.
She's got three tokens.
Yeah. Yeah. She has literally infinitely more tokens than anyone else on Edge of Extinction right now. Let's talk about, while we're on the subject of Tony, let's talk about the shark thing.
Well, first of all, then you got to talk about Sandra.
Right. Oh, yeah. Sandra, the provider.
Of all people, Sandra.
Who knew?
Catching
right?
a shark.
Unbelievable.
Now,
so
now, JD, you've never seen Sandra.
Mm-mm, no, it's, but it seems like she's won twice.
Yeah. Would you believe she's one of the greatest players of in Survivor history?
I mean, not by looking at her, but when I but that's because when I think of a Survivor champion, I think of some chiseled, tan, white dude.
Right. which is makes her, which is one of the reasons she's one of the best ever.
That
she is, looks the way she does, is who she is, and has won twice.
If she can let, if she can catch me a shark every day and I can eat shark for breakfast, I would never vote her off.
Yeah, what do you make of Yule saying, hey, she's catching sharks, she's making everybody happy, I don't want to vote her off.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I would play the game. Anybody who made my life more comfortable, I would refuse to vote them off. And I'd play really well at the game, so nobody would want to vote me off.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I mean, that's a recipe for a win. Yeah, I think this was really surprising, right? Because Sandra in the past has been almost like a kind of famously not really that active around camp. I mean, she wasn't lazy. She doesn't get called out for being lazy or whatever. I'm sure she's gathering wood and doing what she needs to do, but like definitely not catching fish.
Right.
So that was pretty sweet and pretty funny.
Well, her method of catching fish, she didn't go out there and spear any fish herself.
Yeah.
Even her method of catching fish was pretty passive. I saw, you know, she, and just as an aside, I was watching the red carpet entrances to the Rob Has a Podcast 10th anniversary gala party. Mm-hmm. And it's very worth watching if you're a Survivor super fan, because there's people, you know, from all the history of Survivor paired up in random combinations, both big and obscure players, you know, kind of coming together and like, oh, hey, welcome to the party, like a real red carpet thing. Yeah. And but to, so in comes Sandra and Ozzy. And Ozzy, JD, is a, you know, another legendary player, but he's never won.
Mm-hmm.
And Sandra's saying she wants Ozzy to play again and win. And she's been coaching him and that he didn't listen to her last time. And he was like, yeah, I fucked up. I should have listened to Sandra. I fucked up. And they go, well, what's your advice to Ozzy? And she goes, don't go out there just trying to catch fish all the time. Stay at camp and talk to people and make relationships. If they can't find their own food, fuck them. That's what she said.
Wow. So this is where if I was doing the drops, the sound drops again, I'd have that drop of Ozzy saying, I catch fish. That's what I do.
Yeah, exactly. If they can't find their own food, fuck them. And yeah, there she goes, sets up a net and catches the tribe of shark.
Well, she did it in a way where she could still hang out and make relationships and stuff. And also she probably really wanted some shark.
That's why she's the queen. But who else has caught a shark on Survivor, Ryan?
Oh, man, my trivia is not up to snuff today.
Let me tell you who. Richard Hatch and Tom Westman.
I mean, those are legends.
Those are winners.
Only winners get to catch sharks, apparently. Yeah,
apparently so.
Wow. Yeah, I love that scene with Tony, like, carrying the shark and then how they edited in everybody else screaming in their confessionals.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny.
Well, you have to give Nick a confessional somewhere.
Right. That was his only confessional, right?
I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, we barely saw that tribe, right? We saw the shark thing. We saw Tyson talking about Sandra.
They're the functional tribe.
Right.
We don't see much of them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure the winner comes from that tribe. If I had to bet money right now, I would bet that the winner comes from that tribe.
Yeah.
Even though my locked in post episode one winner pick is Parvati, not feeling so good about that anymore. But they're giving us just enough of that other tribe to like make sure we don't forget about them. And in particular, they're giving us just enough of Yule to make sure we don't forget about Yule, because we did not need to hear from Yule or really Tyson, more so Yule. We didn't need to hear from Yule really at all.
Yule, Sophie, Tony, Sarah, and Sandra, and the rest of the tribe is, I mean, Kim is invisible.
Well, Tyson's definitely not invisible, but he's not getting a winner at it, but he's definitely not invisible. Right. Like this whole thing, this episode was like Tyson feels threatened, so he's going to throw Sandra under the bus. And then instead of like getting We got a little bit of what Sander thinks about that, and then a lot of what Yule thinks about that.
Right.
Like,
I like how Yule thinks so dispassionately and logically. He's like, yeah. Well, Sandra does have a reputation for causing chaos, so that is an option.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I don't trust Tyson, and Sandra is bringing the tribe food, so I don't think I want to do that. You know, and that's
a great Yule impression.
Is it?
No.
No, not at all.
It's fine. Yeah, so like we didn't get a ton from this tribe. We got a lot of hijinks, and then we got Yule being strategic, right? That and Tyson being strategic. So like, I don't know, man. That says a lot. That's like really good for Yule's edit, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think Yule is very likely to be the winner. It's too soon to say. I think Sophie could also sneak in there. And I think if we're looking at the other tribe, Jeremy. I could see the game's so early that it's like we're still in tribes, so I kind of think of it on two different tracks. I'm like, well, on the blue tribe on Cele, we've got a potential final three of like Jeremy, Michelle, and Ben. And on the other tribe, we have a potential final three of like Yule, Sophie, and fill in the blank.
Wendell Nick.
Or Nick or even Kim.
Sure. Yeah.
There's a lot of people on the show. How many episodes are there in the season?
14.
Oh.
They start with 20 people and they do like this season, they're going to have at least two buybacks. And then the final episode they go into with six or seven people left in the game still.
Oh, okay. Okay. And then three make it to final voting?
Yeah, usually.
It started off with two. Then at a certain point, they switched it to three. I wouldn't be surprised if this year they're like, well, we're going to do four.
Not at all. I would not be surprised at all if they did four this year, which would just be dumb, but whatever. Everyone there deserves to win. So,
well, that's what's so fascinating about this season is that scene where they were all just staring at each other. It was just like this standoff of everybody knows what they're doing. Everybody knows to do in order to win, but they're with other people who know what to do in order to win.
Yeah,
and
they're
driving themselves insane, trying to outthink the other people.
Yeah, that was fascinating, right? 45 minutes. They don't have watches, so they don't know time from nothing while they're out there. But, you know, the estimate was that they sat there for 45 minutes waiting for someone to make a move.
Mm-hmm.
So funny, right? Like, they're all winners. They all know, don't be the first person to make the move.
And yet Jeremy was not afraid to make the move. He was just like, I'll do it. I'll get it started.
Yeah.
And it did not come back to haunt him at all.
He should have gotten up and been like, oh, don't worry, I'm just going to the bathroom. Yeah. I'll be back soon.
Anybody want to join me? Anybody?
Yeah.
Maybe somebody wants to cross swords. Vote Parvati.
Yeah. Exactly. That was a really interesting moment for sure. Let's talk about Adam and this plan of his to try to vote someone out but keep that person's closest allies on his side.
It did work for him in his season when he won, in his defense. But
he wasn't playing with all winners.
No.
He wasn't playing with Boston Rob.
Wow, the overconfidence.
Yeah.
I mean, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking, this kid. I mean, it's fun, though. Like, it's cool that he is playing so aggressively. It's fun to watch. And it's fun that he's not afraid to just tell people what he's thinking and that he's not afraid to try to strong arm Boston Rob because everybody else is scared shitless of Boston Rob. It's fun that he's able to say, hey, we got you where we want you and you got to jump on board. Unfortunately for him, it's also fun to then watch him walk away and have Rob say, what the hell is this kid doing? But what's so great about Rob is that we've seen this a few times this season. People come to him with these plans And he yes-ands them. He just says yes. You know, he doesn't show his reaction. He's just like, yeah, like last week when Danny came to him and said, let's vote off Parvati, he was like, okay, I'm in. You got me.
Yeah.
And then Adam sees that happen. And the next week says, you know what? I think I'll go to Robbins and tell him we're voting off Parvati.
I mean, to be fair, he probably didn't actually see Rob lie to Danny in that moment. I think they were just alone.
No, but he saw that Danny wanted to vote off Parvati and Danny got voted off.
Yeah, that's crazy, right? Like, why, Adam, come on, man.
I have a question. So it seems like Rob has a little alliance of three, and it seems like everybody else wanted to get rid of one of those people, right? Correct. So did they have the votes if they didn't include Rob to vote somebody off, if they could all agree?
Yes.
Yeah, that's how they did it, in fact. They voted.
Yeah.
That's why. Why would that guy go to Rob? They didn't include Rob in their final plan.
What a weird guy. Did he go to Rob?
Yeah. Why would he go to Rob? He was trying to do damage control before the damage was done, right?
Yeah. So that Rob wouldn't take out his anger.
Well, how could he? Because he'd be so weak. Everybody against his team.
Yep. What Adam doesn't realize is that Rob would have to come back contrite. He would have no other choice. So if Adam had just kept his mouth shut, they vote Parvati, done deal. Rob has to come back to him. He has nowhere else to go. You know, it's crazy.
And not only that, but he also alienated his entire alliance.
Yeah.
Because they were pissed off. Like, why are you throwing us under the bus with Rob? Oh, you're going to get the glory for being the one to tell Rob he's safe.
Yeah, and I love how they just were like, screw Adam. He can vote for Parvati. That's fine. We're going to leave him out of the loop. If they had been more paranoid about something not going their way, they would have wanted him on board. You know what I mean? So it's like really ballsy to be like, we don't need Adam's vote, and we don't need Rob, Parvati, and Ethan's vote. We're just going to do it. Like,
and
that's crazy.
Who had been Adam's tight ally just completely left him in the dark.
Yeah, that's crazy. Do we think that Denise did that because she wanted to build sort of a resume of examples where they aren't together so that when they do need to be together, it's not obvious?
No.
Or do you think Denise is just like, I got to be done with Adam. He's too much.
Yeah, I don't think she's that kind of player where she overthinks the strategy. I think she just was like, wait a minute, he just went behind my back and revealed our plans to Boston Rob. Okay, well, I can't trust him anymore.
God, Adam, in one fell swoop, Adam lost everyone.
Yeah.
That's nuts. He's a dead man walking, right? Like,
I mean, he can worm his way. You never know what's going to happen next week, but I don't think he's going to win the game.
Oh, he's definitely not winning the game.
He told us last week he can't win if he's not willing to take a major swing, and he didn't take a major swing last week.
He tried to this week. Yeah.
But why won't they just go for Rob? We've left off the elephant in the room, which is I'm heartbroken that Ethan is gone.
I know. JD, Ethan is the winner of Survivor Africa with season 3. He's the guy who played the longest to go on this season. And he has beaten cancer twice. His story is incredible. Like, by all accounts, he should not be out there at all playing.
He was going to die of cancer in between his Survivor stints.
Yeah, that vote for him came out of nowhere.
Yeah, the only clue we got, and as soon as she said it, I was like, I just had this sinking feeling, because why would they include this if they're not going to do it, was when Michelle said, well, maybe instead of Parvati, we take out Ethan, and really that'll weaken Rob.
What?
Again, just vote out Rob. We waited 15 years to see Ethan on this show again.
Well,
he didn't do anything.
At the edge of the extinction, so...
That's true. He's still there. I mean, look, in their defense, I think it was a good move for them in some ways. And also, like, Ethan was not a strong enough player strategically to head this off.
True. That's true. Ethan was the kind of player. Ethan's the kind of player where he's not going to play the game exceptionally well at all. But if he gets to the end, he probably still wins regardless.
Because you like him. I mean, he played a good strategic game in Africa, but it was an easier path.
Yeah, and it felt like he was in over his head a little bit this season.
Definitely. They definitely made an effort to show the times he felt in over his head, and I can't keep up with the pace of the game, which is, it's not like it was before, which I also feel like is just a red herring, because if you go and play today for the first time in your life, it's a new game. Like, you're going to have to keep up. Like, why is it different if you played 15 years ago?
Yeah, it's not like you got a whole bunch of practice already playing at the slow pace, and now you have to play the fast pace. Like, it's been a long time. He's not, you know, playing. He's still going to be playing off the cuff like
and
he would
know,
be.
He went to who he was comfortable with, the old school players.
Right.
And he didn't really expand his, you know, he should have had relationships, stronger relationships and alliances with the other people. I mean, maybe he needed to have, as he said, a decent relationship with Adam. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so he, I can see he's not directly at fault. Like, he didn't do anything that led to him getting voted off, but he didn't proactively do anything that would prevent him from being considered for being voted off.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're up against him in the end, you're going to lose because he just beat cancer.
Right. And what do you think Rob is going to think about his wife's ex-boyfriend joining her on Edge of Extinction?
Oh, yeah.
JD, Ethan and Amber dated before Rob met
Amber. Oh, is that a coincidence? Yeah.
No, I mean, Amber was on Survivor season 2, Ethan was on season 3, and they met each other at Survivor events. They dated briefly, and then Amber went and played Survivor with Boston Rob in season 8.
After, so, and that's when they got together, but she and Ethan were, you know.
Oh, well.
Whoa.
So we might get that conjugal visit after all.
Yeah, I say, it seems like Rob
but
and
Ethan
Amber
and Rob really were allies this season.
Seems like Rob and Amber have a really solid relationship. They've been together a long time. I can't believe they've been together a long time, because the way they started as tabloid darlings, they seem doomed.
Agreed. Yeah, it's really surprising. But apparently they're made
Survivor.
For each other.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Unbelievable.
It's crazy. Yeah. The whole thing is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think on that tribe, I mean, I don't know why they haven't done it already, but I feel like unless they swap soon, like, Jeremy is in prime position to be in control of this tribe.
It seems like it. Jeremy is playing a great game right now. I think him and Michelle are in a really good spot, and they're both playing really well together. You know, Michelle got a lot of material, and this has really been her story, is like, I have a lot to prove because people don't think I deserve to be here. And I, you know, she's saying maybe I do deserve to be here and here's why. And I totally agree with her. Like, the way she played this round was really impressive.
Yeah. No, she did great this round.
Yeah.
The first round she not, you know, didn't know what was going on and felt, and she was feeling overwhelmed, but I'm hoping she'll have an arc. I could see her there in the end, sitting there in the end. Getting zero votes, but sitting there in the end.
Yep. I could see her there in the end and getting the majority of votes too. It just depends, but who she's up against. But honestly, nobody is a goat. Nobody is a gimme win. Nobody is a gimme win over them at the end. You know what I mean? Like, there's nobody you could go, if I go to the end with them, I'm going to win for sure.
Now, what about your original winner pick, Denise? How do you think she's doing?
She's still not in a great spot, but I think she's in a much better spot than obviously she was after the first episode. I feel more confident about her than I do Parvati, actually.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, Denise doesn't seem to be being portrayed as like that tuned in to the game, but she's surviving.
Yep, exactly.
And interesting that Adam gave her back the other half of the idol. And we learned that because last week she was hiding her idol when Rob had them empty their bags.
Yeah.
And we were wondering, well, where was Adams? So last week, JD, Rob, like a true mafioso, demanded at tribal council that everybody empty their bags to prove that they didn't have hidden immunity.
Wow.
And they all went along with it.
But Denise has one, and she managed to hide it in her hand during the whole thing, so nobody noticed.
And she just didn't say a word. She just, like, people just overlook her all the time.
Yeah. People do overlook her, and I think that bodes well for her. Like, the edit is unfortunately also kind of overlooking her. She doesn't really have a good edit right now, so it could turn around. I'm not saying it's impossible, but, you know, she doesn't appear to be the winner at the current time.
But was there a point in her initial season when she appeared to be the winner?
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
I don't know if there was.
Yeah, I mean, she's the kind of player. Yeah, exactly. The editors, they honestly don't really know how to. And I think this is something that Australian Survivor does a lot better. And I don't know if it's because they force them to say confessionals about their strategy, whatever it is. But Australian Survivor has had several like UTR female winners that they still get great confessional content from them explaining their strategy, even if their strategy is, I need to just chill, like everybody else can take each other out, you know?
JD, and have you ever had a UTR?
Yeah.
It can be quite painful.
Under the radar, sorry. Little edgic speak there, but now I have to explain edgic. Anyways, I want to talk about
the extinction.
Yeah, I want to talk about the challenge a little bit. You know, obviously it's worth it for immunity, but is it worth it for chicken kebabs to dig up a ladder like that? You guys think that's?
I just love how low stakes the prizes are, but how pumped everybody is, because when they won that and they were running off, and Jeff Probst just goes, "Chicken kebabs."
I love the way he sells the items.
Yeah.
Just like you said, JD. Let me hear Jeff Probst introducing to them a stick of gum.
Oh, okay. The prize for this round? A stick of gum!
What?
What? Oh, my God!
Go back and get your prize now.
Oh,
stick of gum!
But it wasn't just the chicken kebabs, which I think are, if you're hungry, a big prize. But it was immunity, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
That ladder, I was just like, wow, you know, Tony, what is Tony going to say about this ladder?
I know. He's like, this ladder's broken. The bottom rung didn't come off.
I want to bring this ladder back to the tribe.
Yeah. What we're talking about, JD's last episode, Tony made a ladder out of bamboo and it was to get fruit from the trees. It was very shaky. He took the first step he took on it, it broke.
The rung broke, and he goes, oh, it was designed to do that. That's part of it.
It's great.
And it worked, though. It worked.
So to see a ladder in the challenge was really fun. But that puzzle looked hard as hell, I got to say.
It did look hard. I would not want to do that puzzle. I love how Rob just steps up to do everything, even if he's like totally unqualified to do it.
Yeah, I mean, he is pretty good at puzzles, but yeah, he does. That is his game. Every
he likes to be the guy.
He's the guy. He's going to be the big player. So it's like you got to get him out early, or he's going to stick around forever and always put himself in that place. I've said it before this season. Like everybody who ended up on the non-Boston Rob tribe is lucky because there's nobody who's. I mean, Yule has stepped into a leadership role, but not in the same way. Like he has to be in control of his tribe. And I think if you're on a tribe with him, you have to rethink everything. You have to calibrate everything around how you deal with that.
Yeah. If the last part of the challenge was like, write an essay on sex therapy and emotional labor through the feminist lens, Rob would be like, I got this. Right.
And Denise, who is a sex therapist, would be like, well, okay. If that's what you think.
Yeah.
Well, but was Rob so bad or was Sophie so good? Because she has smoked Rob on puzzles 2 weeks in a row now.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Sophie is really good at puzzles. We saw that the first time she played. She's super smart. She's probably like her and Yule are like 1A and 1B in terms of intelligence out there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, she smoked him. They also had a big lead.
Yeah, that's true. And Rob caught up. So Rob was really good. They nearly caught up on that puzzle.
Yeah. So I think if they hadn't had that lead, it would have been damn close.
How about when they dropped it?
Oh, that was so funny, right? And the music was perfect for that. Like, I don't know how they found the right cue for that, but it like sounded like it was building up to victory, and then it was just like, ew, as it fell out. It was so good. How'd they do that?
Well,
so
I wanted to ask you about the music, because the music this season, I feel like, has really stepped up.
Yes.
There is, and I want to hear about it from your perspective, there is some cues they've been using this season that are like these ominous tones that they haven't used in the past, but they've used it on every episode. And I feel like it's upped the tension and suspense of this season so much, where you just see people looking at each other and you hear this like, dong.
Yeah.
Dong.
I think they have been influenced by the music chosen for Australian Survivor.
Oh, really?
You know, season one of Australian Survivor, the music was so over the top to me. I just couldn't believe it was like a Christopher Nolan trailer every single moment. It was just like, boom, 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 you know, just like so big and huge, right? And like really impactful stuff. And I think the composers or whoever is working on the library has plussed up a lot of the old cues or added new cues that use some more modern trailer techniques, and I think that's what we're hearing now in the American version as well, is just like there's this real approach to it where it's more impactful and really intense almost, whereas in the past there would have been a lot more breathing room musically.
Sometimes it's almost like a horror film.
Yeah, absolutely. They're just like everything is amped to 11, you know.
And what
like,
about the beginning of the episode?
Oh, this was going to be my hold up, bro. Okay. When we get to the segments, but yeah, it started off with like a pop song.
You better get ready. They're coming for ya.
And then
it's the Rob with the twig. They're coming for you to tickle you.
It was such a weird choice. I mean, I like it. It's like, you know, I like that use of that song at the beginning, but I don't know about the scene that it went into, you know?
I loved it. That was hilarious.
JD, did you notice anything different about the music between now and the last time you watched the show several years ago?
It all seemed like reality show stuff.
pretty subtle. Yeah. We're talking subtleties here for sure. But speaking of Hold Up, Bro, should we get into our segments?
Yeah,
down.
Sure. I guess
we've covered most of the episode. Yeah, yeah. Let's do it. Let's do Getting Loud.
We only like it if it's loud. We only like it if it's loud. Go! I can get loud too. What the loud
to me. Who got loud this week? Who stood out in a good way? Who impressed you?
You go first, Ryan.
All right, so at the first commercial break, I was like, oh, Adam's getting loud this week.
Yeah.
You know? I was really excited about Adam, but...
Adam, maybe Boston Rob should be playing more like I do.
Right, exactly. That was really fun. Right?
He said that.
Maybe Michael Jordan should be playing basketball more like me.
like this guy. yeah, but I'm gonna say that for me, Michelle got loud. I really, really appreciated the way she played this episode. The confidence of going into that tribal, knowing we don't need Adam's vote and we're really going to teach him a lesson and put him on the outs, was like genius. Now, and it sets them up still even better next round, because even if Adam is like, well, fuck you guys, I'm going with Rob and Parvati, they still don't have the numbers.
Right. They've got four.
Yeah. Adam is just totally screwed and he's got to know it now.
Yeah. But he looked like he'd seen a ghost.
I love
tribal council.
Yeah. I love the way that, you know, future Reem played this round. She was great. Michelle was great.
Future Reem. Gosh, I don't know who got loud for me. Michelle and Jeremy are good, but I'm going to go you know, I just got to, while we still got her, pay some of my respects to the queen.
Sure.
I'm going to say Sandra got loud by catching a shark, somehow ingratiating herself to Yul, and, basically cursing out Tyson in a confessional. Just because I love Sandra. Actually, I'm gonna give it to Natalie on the edge.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great pick.
Natalie destroying the necklace and hiding the other one after, and figuring out what the necklaces meant. I thought just figuring out it was the necklaces was pretty darn impressive.
Yeah, that's like a real escape room style puzzle, by the way. Like, you see that kind of thing, like,
oh yeah.
Yeah, and it's great. It's a great puzzle. And, like, it just, I love that it was integrated into something that just seems innocuous.
So, yeah, I had forgotten about people on the edge, but I'll give it to Natalie.
I'd give it to Adam, and I'd stick with Adam. I think he was super, he got real loud. It doesn't matter that he got shrunk down back to a quiet little fella at the end, but he played loud, for sure.
That's true. He did play loud. He did.
Shrunk back to a quiet little fella.
He is a quiet little fella, but he is a little fella.
At how least about when season. Parvati said she was going to, like, chew him up and leave his bones? Like, devour him and leave his bones on the edge of extinction?
Parvati's using some great imagery this season. Rising like a phoenix from the ashes. That was a great line in the first one. Yeah, Parvati's awesome. And so charming, man. I don't get it. Like, how did she dodge it again? You know?
She's that good.
That good. That good.
Well, and I think it had to do with Adam blowing up the plan and them saying, well, now let's not vote out Parvati so Adam doesn't get his way.
Right. Yeah. Maybe it wasn't so much what she did, but what everything else did around her. All right. Let's move on to our next segment. This is Hold Up, Bro.
Hold up, bro.
Hold up, bro. This is what was the moment you said, hold up, bro, and you had to rewind your DVR or scan back on your CBS All Access. I love plugging CBS All Access every episode now.
Yeah, we get money for that, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I get money for it because I'm the one who says it. But
right, you know. Of course.
Anyways, you guys know what my hold up, bro, was. It was that opening musical number.
Mine was watching Tony prepare Sarah for her mission.
So
and
put good.
Spitting into the ashes and the, like having the ashes blow all over their mine, faces.
I already mentioned mine. It was when the guy got eliminated, Ethan got eliminated and went to that different island. And I was like, oh my God, Amber was dead the whole time. Oh my God.
It was like the end of The Sixth Sense.
She was dead the whole time. That's too funny.
That's hilarious.
That's great. Yeah.
All right. That all right. Works.
Yeah. Last segment. Ill regrets.
What's the time?
It's time to get ill.
What's the time?
It's time to get
ill regrets.
All right. Who do you think is going to have ill regrets about a choice they made, something they did this episode? You can't choose Ethan.
Is there any doubt who will have ill regrets?
This really should be unanimous, but I'm sure JD will do a bit answer, hopefully.
I'm going for Adam.
Yeah, it's Adam, right? I mean, he's so toast now.
JD, what do you think? Who's going to regret something?
Adam. Sorry, I can't. I only know so many of these two.
It's just too obvious. Well, you know, could say the guy who... the person who did such and such. But yeah, Adam is a good answer.
Well, when I say JD's going to do a bit answer and then you say Adam that is the bit. So
lessons in comedy
from the one person who's not a professional comedian.
By the way, can I just say, was Kim on this episode?
Nope. But neither was Sophie. Other than some reaction shots.
Yeah, but they made sure to show us Sophie's reaction shots.
Sophie has been getting a ton of reaction shots at challenges.
That's why I think she's good to go.
I think she's a finalist. Oh, her and Yul, I think, are in the final three.
Oh, man.
I don't know who the third is, but...
I'm hoping Tony.
Oh, my God.
I'm not expecting Tony, but I'm hoping Tony.
I can't wait. I almost want, I want all the episodes now.
I know.
Like,
I know.
I want to binge this show really bad.
JD, was there anything else from this episode that stood out to you or that you wondered about, or was it pretty?
It all seemed like standard fare. You know, I always watch the show and I want more. Someday, I watch old Amazing Races with my boy. I'll watch old Survivors with him. Even though watching this season lets me know who some of the winners are. But I think it'd be a fun game to watch, even if you know who's going to win.
Well, and also, a lot of these people have played multiple times, so even if you see them, doesn't mean the season they actually won.
Right. In fact, most of them have played more than once, right?
Yeah, I think a slight majority, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
All right, well.
Did we get any reaction to our big guests last week? Have we gotten any reviews or...
Well, I could check. We did get some comments on the website. Website version of the podcast. Let's see. Not on that episode, though.
Oh, okay.
We got a big comment. Let's get into this. This is sort of interesting. We got a big comment on our first episode.
Okay.
I don't know how to say the name, but Jan Sipinen says, "Good pod, guys, but I had to comment on a few things. First of all, the ethnic minority women voted out first is a myth." Okay.
Okay.
"It has actually only happened 8 times in 40 seasons." Well, that's kind minute. Of that's a lot, actually.
That's a big percentage.
It's a big percentage considering the percentage of ethnic minority women that get cast.
Right.
Right.
8 out of 40, that's 1 out of 5. That's...
And 20%. In the last 10 seasons, the only ones are Rachel and Natalie. Rachel season 33 and Natalie season 40. Uh-huh. If you want to count Gonzalez, season 36. I don't know.
Well, why wouldn't we want to count her?
Yeah, of course we want to count her.
If so you want to count her. I didn't really like her, so I don't count her.
Every one of those had reasons to be voted out that aren't stereotypical reasons to vote out a minority, i.e. not fitting in or something like that. I mean, that's our point, though, right? Like, that's never going to be, oh, we're voting this person out because they don't fit in because they're a minority. It's never going to be that.
Right.
You know?
And... I mean, Natalie, it may just have been coincidental. She was, you know, Jeremy's pal and it got her voted off, but it's just not a good look.
Yeah. The thing is, when you're playing the game, it's really hard to, like, if everybody is saying we're voting out Natalie, it's really hard to be like, guys, actually, should we reconsider this? Because, you know, we don't want to have a bad look of voting out a minority woman first, right? Like, you just really don't want it to be you at that point.
Right.
So it's really hard to, like, take the woke stance and prevent that from happening once you're already out there. So I don't really blame the contestants. I blame society at large, if anything, because this game is just a microcosm of society.
So I guess the real question is, like you said, looking at 1 out of 5, you know, versus how 20% versus how, what's the percentage that women of color are in the cast?
Yeah.
Because I can tell you, it's got to be less than 20%.
Yeah, yeah.
So all right. I think they're overrepresented as first boots. But this person did say that we did a great podcast, so I'm going to go ahead and say, that actually they're right and we're
right. Fair enough. Well, thank you. You know, thanks for listening. And it's interesting to talk about this stuff. So,
and last week we forgot to talk about something we told somebody on Twitter we would talk about, which we can talk about another time, but it was their legacies.
Danny's legacy. And we'll have plenty of opportunities to talk about Danny's legacy this season, but
I do recommend another podcast, Taryn Armstrong's Survivor podcast on the RUP network. He has a weekly legacy index that he has created.
I love that. I gotta listen to that.
You gotta listen. It's a poll that I guess he runs on Twitter or something week by week. So to see where people thought, you know, he has different tiers, like legend tier, top tier, and a couple tiers below that, and where people rank from week to week. And like when it started, Kim was in the legend tier, but she's fallen, you know, out of the legend tier. So it's interesting to follow that. I recommend the podcast.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up because I'm sure JD loves talking about ranking each person's legacy.
I would talk about it for another hour.
I think Joff is a legend.
Fuming.
And Ryan is he's teetering on the edge of legend. In the next year.
Well, I don't have a cool nickname. So,
JD, I think you're a legend, and you're certainly one of our most legendary guests. Thank you for your time and your service.
Well, you know, JD is literally in every episode, right? There's a little tag of JD at the end of every episode saying,
"Oh yeah,
the tribe has spoken. Now put out your little lamp with your lamp stopper."
That's you. But and you're still putting that in?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't actually listen to this crap.
Why would you listen all the way to the end anyways, right?
Why would anyone? Am I right?
I mean, at this point in the podcast, I'm already switching to a different podcast, right?
JD, where can we find you other than the end of our podcast? Where can we find you on social media so we can be privy to your great wisdom on politics
at JD Riznar. That's about it. Yeah, or at my house
on Twitter. Yeah,
come on by.
All right, I'm a follower.
Yeah,
a lot of good content.
Yeah,
nope. And don't not you right have another moment, podcast? But you can go listen. You can go listen to the archives of Beyond Yacht Rock because the show is encyclopedic. You can take it off the shelf anytime, and it's evergreen.
Yep.
It's a very good podcast.
Beyond, it's a legendary podcast.
Beyond, it's in the legend tier. Beyond Yacht Rock. Check it out. You'll hear JD talk about something he actually knows about.
Yeah. JD, thanks for joining us. Scott, thanks for joining me again.
Ryan, thanks for joining me. I look forward to your Twitter musings at Ryan Elder Music.
Yep, and yours are at Ryan Elder Music as well. Yes. I forward them along. But
thank you very much.
If you want to skip the middleman, you can catch him at Scott Chernoff.
Yeah.
Chernoff.
Sure.
Why do I still say that sometimes? Chernoff.
That's a shitty name. I should have changed it for the business.
You should be at
the Chernoff. Too late now. Too late.
Obviously, you should be at the Chernoff, right?
Yes. Where were you, JD?
You probably knew me.
I should be. I probably did.
I could have.
Well, I should have called. Next time a social media platform.
I mean, I'm going to say call yourself a Chernoff. So you don't have to call him.
All right.
So save yourself a phone.
And make sure that that's still, the case. All right.
All right, guys. Good stuff. Talk to you later.
The tribe has tokens.
Tribe has spoken. Now I'm going to put out your little lamp with my lamp stopper.